Good morning. I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. When Brandon Scott was sworn in as the 52nd mayor of Baltimore City in December, he inherited a throng of challenges that have haunted elected officials for decades. Policing, gun violence, homelessness, housing equity, and of course, he took the helm during the public health crisis of our lifetimes. Nearly 3 months into his tenure, how's it going? How does one establish priorities when confronted with such a mountain of problems? He's joining us to talk about it. Welcome back to On the Record, Mayor Scott.
Thank you, Sheila. I'm glad to be back. Happy to be back.
At your inauguration, December 8th, you referred to gun violence as a public health emergency. And then just weeks later, over one four-day period, 9 people were killed, 11 others injured by guns. Your response in an official statement said in part, "We will only reduce crime if our approach is comprehensive." There were 335 homicides in the city last year, 40 homicides so far this year. Violence does not seem to have been slowed by the pandemic. What is included in your comprehensive approach to ending gun violence?
Well, I think, Sheila, I'll start off by saying that while we have seen a reduction in violent crime in Baltimore this year, it's still far too many for me, right? Having just a fewer homicides than last year is not enough for me. Even having a total violent crime in the city being down 23% and in the robbery categories that include street robberies and carjackings being down 43% is still not enough for me. And this is having this comprehensive approach is why I created the Mayor's Office of Neighborhood and Safety Engagement so that we can have an agency that's actually coordinating that. And what you will be hearing from us, Sheila, because this is the first time that this will ever be done here in Baltimore. Agencies outside of the police department and in some instances the health department have never had to be a part of focusing on how we're dealing with violence in our city. So under the direction of Director Jackson, what will be happening is we will be talking and developing a deep strategy about what every agency can do, but also about capacity building for our neighborhood groups, our partners in our neighborhoods. When you think about this, think about it like this. We will continue to focus our police department the where they should be, making sure that we're holding them to a higher standard and all of our agencies to a higher standard, monitoring our progress every single day and not accepting anything short of complete and total dedication to making Baltimore safer. But we know where the focus for BPD needs to be, right? We know when I came into office, they had these things called micro zones, the areas in the city that are supposed to have the most violence and had a intensified approach from BPD. Well, there were 131 of those, right? And we know that if everywhere is a priority, nowhere is a priority. We work with our police commissioner and his staff and push them to modernize those, reducing them down to 81 because there are places that they had a focus on that aren't inherently violent. You and I have been in Baltimore quite some time between the two of us. You and I would never say that 41st and Falls or 36th and Falls is the area that violent crime is rampant in Baltimore City. That's why we have to change that. But when you think about what Monsey is going to be doing, under Director Jackson, it's also about bringing in those other partners. The health department will be one of our lead agencies on that as well. Bringing in the school system, even though we don't have direct control of them, recreation and parks, DPW, DJS, all social services, all to grow and develop a plan of how we're going to create equitable safety for people in every neighborhood in Baltimore through coordinated approaches that focus in on those neighborhoods and the people, and particularly our young people and families that we know are most at risk. How we're going to be helping people to re-enter into our community in a better way. We are also going to be trying to focus from a policing standpoint on getting a handle on the flow of illegal guns into our city. And the most important thing, Sheila, and this work is already underway, the beginning portions of this is underway, is we will have a fully implemented group violence reduction strategy that focuses not just from a law enforcement standpoint on the most violent individuals, but also bring an opportunity and services for those individuals and their families to change their lives and get the resources that they need.
That's a lot. Let me pick up in particular on the micro zones, going from 131 down to 81. You say you've picked the 81 places where there is the most violent crime. Are you worried, though, about concentrating police in neighborhoods that already feel over-policed or lack trust in officers?
Well, listen, we know that I am a big, big proponent of our reform efforts. In many cases, I've been leading on those efforts here in the city. But also, Sheila, it's about not about having police. It's about making sure that they're in the neighborhoods, operating through a lens of a constitutional, operating through a lens of equity, but also not being there as they were. We are not going to go back to the strategies that they had when I was a young kid, that if you were young and looked like me, that meant you should be stopped and arrested and thrown in the back of a truck just because you may have dropped a piece of candy on the ground. We're not going back to that. They will be focused in on people that are committing violence. We're also going to be working to develop strategies on how we are going to be diverting calls away from BPD to go to other agencies and other partners that they should have never been going to in the first place. It's about modernizing our approach to policing, to have it be more focused, to have it be more accountable, to have it be more community-based. And it's all that inclusive is how we're going to have the impact that we want.
This might be a good moment then for me to ask you about the recently formed Trauma-Informed Care Task Force, which you've described as part of what needs to be done to reduce violence. How would that reduce violence?
Well, I think we first have to understand that so many people in Baltimore see and have incidents of trauma in their lives. And we know, as some of our teachers used to say when we were growing up here, is that hurt people hurt people. When you think about what happens in our city, Sheila, when somebody witnesses their cousin, their brother, their father, their mother get hurt, how often in our city does that pain and trauma from that incident lead directly into another incident of violence that can then spiral for years and years of it back and forth? We have to, if we're going to be a city that's going to reduce violence, we have to deal with the real fact that we have so many people, our young people in particular, who are experiencing these traumatic events, and we are not helping them heal. We are not helping them deal with that in a different way. We are not showing them how they can consistently be working to repair from the things that they witnessed, and also that it's okay to ask for help. We have been a community that has taught people that you should just toughen up or get over it. And that kind of thing leads to this environment where we're trying to harden people instead of allowing them to do the very human thing of heal. And this healing and having this focus and having trauma-informed care in our agencies will allow for folks to identify our people that we're interacting with who may need help and may need services. And that one instance of someone in a rec center or someone in DPW or housing, whoever, getting some person in Baltimore City the help that they need may save 5, 6, 7, 8 lives in the city. And I think we need to understand that.
As Baltimore City Mayor Brandon Scott on the record on WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about his priorities for his first 100 days in office. Baltimore and the Department of Justice entered into a consent decree in April 2017. Today, Thursday, is the last day for the public to comment on the consent decree monitoring priorities for year 4. We're going to link to that on our website. What are the year 4 priorities for police monitoring?
In the 4th year under the consent decree monitoring plan, these are some of the policies, remaining policies that will be covered, that will be addressed. Officer discipline, BPD's law enforcement assistant diversion program, child abuse investigations, our early intervention system aimed at identifying early on and correcting officer behavior, problematic behavior, expungement of disciplinary records, BPD's mobile field force, which preserved First Amendment rights and public safety during public assemblies or protests, in training at the academy is going to be big. Complete in-service training is underway. There are many things there, Sheila. They're all critically important. And I think the most important thing is that BPD has been in the monitoring team, have been doing a better job of communicating about that. We've been listing that up in my office. We had a update about the consent decree with myself and the police commissioner just a few weeks ago, because we want everyone to know, officers, community, citizens alike, that we are taking this very seriously, that we want their input, and that we're going to continue to push this as deeply, as thoroughly, and as fast as possible for our city.
You testified in Annapolis in favor of returning the police department back to city control. I understand it is now a state agency, has been since the Civil War, but practically, what difference would that make to a citizen of Baltimore? What change would they see?
Yeah, I guess, Sheila, the first thing that I would say is that it has never been a local agency. It was created as a state agency. It has always been that way. What would change is there's a few things here. And I think you and I have talked about this before. One, this is about representative democracy. There is no other jurisdiction in the state that doesn't have a locally controlled police force. Actually, there's only one other major city in the country that doesn't have that, and they are currently trying to get theirs back. There were three. St. Louis got theirs back, and I know Kansas City is trying to do the same thing. But there are things here in city government with BPD that should have never went to Annapolis. For example, you might recall when I've been pushing for having the police districts redrawn. We haven't redistricted our police districts in over 60 years, right? That is not something that I should have had to go to Annapolis for multiple years in order to get something done that could just be done here locally. Another great example of that is right now, even though that will never happen under my watch, Baltimore Police Department officers by law don't have to wear body cameras because the law passed here locally is illegal because we can't pass local laws on BPD. Thinking about also after the appointment of Kevin Davis, the council, we got slammed when I was on the council for the fact that the police commissioner, Kevin Davis, was getting a 6-year contract. Well, unknown to everyone but me at the time, state law required that it be 6-year contracts. And I had to go to then just Senate, now Senate President Bill Ferguson, to introduce a law to say that the mayor of Baltimore can enter into any length of contract that they want. That's what this is about. This is not about telling the police commissioner how to do his or her job and be involved in every single decision, because that's not the way it works for all the other agencies. But this is about making sure that things that need to be changed, policy that needs to be addressed and should be, can be addressed.
Let's turn to the big public health crisis you pledged to address when you took office, the COVID-19 pandemic. About 10% of Baltimore City residents have received the vaccine. What are the plans to get the remaining 90% vaccinated in a timely and equitable way?
Well, I think the first and most important thing, Sheila, about the vaccine is that we don't have enough. I know you've seen me publicly say that we need more vaccine. We understand that issue starts with the failed presidential administration of Donald Trump, but we know that we need more help and more focus from our state as well. To date, we've had over 59,000 first doses in the city be given out, but also there have been many, many issues with the process as the state has laid it out. Due to the prioritization dictated to us by the state and the extraordinary low supply, only 5% of our Black residents have received their first dose. It's unacceptable. For us, we know that we need more vaccine. We also, there are things that we have to fight through. For example, I've said before, I've said again, we have two mass vaccination sites that the state is running here in Baltimore City, at the stadium, M&T Bank, and at the convention center. 50% of those doses should go to our residents. We have not heard anything about that. In fact, we wrote a letter asking that the 20,000 seniors in Baltimore City that we have on a list, predominantly African Americans, that they be prioritized there, and that still hasn't happened. We know that because of the lack of vaccine and because of the lack of equity, I actually wrote a letter to Johnson & Johnson, who's making their vaccine here, seeing if they will be open to dealing directly with us, because if they're making their vaccine here in a city that is COVID, has the COVID numbers that we do, our residents should benefit. But the most important thing that we need is supply. We're going to continue to push on the state. We've been working through issues. For example, we had to get the permission to work with our partners. That's why we've developed our mobile strategy with the health department that is actually focusing in going into our neighborhoods that we know are hard to reach folks, especially our seniors. This is why we also have the MassVac site from the health department at BCC. This is why we're partnering with our hospital partners, our other help partners in the city to focus through a lens of equity. This is why we also partner with Morgan State on how we're going to develop more strategy and have credible messages of getting people to understand the importance of taking the vaccine. But having all of that infrastructure does not matter if we do not have more vaccine. We need more vaccine, and we need it right now.
Well, has Johnson & Johnson responded to you?
There was a response, and we're going to be having follow-up conversations with them, and we'll be sure to update you once that happens.
Governor Hogan said when he heard about your request to Johnson & Johnson, essentially, nice try, it's not going to happen. Is he right?
Well, I can't live in the governor's mind. All I will say is, again, you miss 100% of the shots that you don't take. And if we had a more equitable process at the state level, then maybe we wouldn't need to ask Johnson & Johnson for help.
Okay, we need to take a short break here. Mayor Brandon Scott is with us talking about priorities for Baltimore in his first months in office. After the break, a few questions for the mayor that listeners sent us. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Today we're talking with Baltimore City's Mayor Brandon Scott. We're hearing about his priorities to address issues that have afflicted the city for a long time. We asked listeners if they have questions for you via social media. Here's one. What is your plan for water and sewer infrastructure 3, 5, and 10 years out? The systems are outdated and fail often. The roads are worn and getting worse. And with more new development, the strain on these systems just grows. How would you answer?
The first thing I would say is that the most important part of dealing with our water infrastructure is to get DPW leadership and the infrastructure and leadership that they need. We are actively trying to bring a top-notch and very close to bringing a top-notch public works professional here to run our city department. But Sheila, that we have already begun in understanding that we're going to have a presidential administration with President Biden and Vice President Harris that believes in investments in city and city infrastructure. I was on a call with the Vice President, Vice President Harris, a few weeks ago, talking with other mayors about the need to invest in cities and cities infrastructure. The same thing last week with the Department of Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg about the need to invest directly in and partner with cities, because not only do these projects do a lot of tough work that we know needs to be done, and we know that these systems were once built with assistance from the federal government, but also the importance of what this could mean for recovery and bringing people back to work and creating opportunity for other folks. And that's the kind of focus that we're going to have on this, and also doing these infrastructure projects to make our city more sustainable over time.
What specifically do you want from the Biden administration in infrastructure?
Well, I think that there's a lot. We can talk a lot about that. We know we need the basic stuff to help us get back to levels of supporting bridges and roads and pipes and those things, but also more innovative things. We've talked to them about specifically about infrastructure projects. For example, they are considering the impacts of these historical racist highways like the Highway to Nowhere, which is the poster child for that. Infrastructure investments to how to reimagine those spaces and help to bring equitable development around there and equitable transportation around there, helping us in our city have a more robust transportation system, thinking about infrastructure that we can have for bike and other modes of transportation. There are many things, but also we need their help when it comes to the COVID-19. We need their help with vaccine. We need direct funds to cities for recovery. We know all the things that we need, and we're very ecstatic because we know that the president and the vice president both also know how important that is.
I'm talking with Baltimore City Mayor Brandon Scott on the record on WYPR. We're talking about his time in office so far and priorities for the coming months. A question from another listener. What is your plan to monitor the school system, which is about to go back to in-person learning? This listener says, I'd like to know specifics because I don't trust the school system to be transparent. How will you keep children, their families, and the city teachers and staff safe as they return to in-person learning? And I know you're not the CEO of the schools, but you are the mayor.
Thank you. Sheila, I would just start off by saying that this is actually timely because what I've been doing is actually visiting schools with no one else knowing to make sure that the ones that they're ready. But we're always, I will say that our health commissioner, Dr. DeRosa, has been working and advising and looking at the things that the schools have been doing the whole time. We will continue to do that. I will continue to talk directly with the CEO and with the representation of the teachers to make sure that folks are being safe. We know today they announced a very robust testing program, which I think I have not seen one that robust from schools that are returning. We are going to be monitoring that like we monitor everything else from a point of public health.
You announced yesterday you're going to hire a director of broadband and digital equity, a first for this city. What can a director do to make digital access equitable?
So the position, Sheila, will serve as the city's primary representative for coordination with internal and external stakeholders focused on digital equity and broadband issues. But it's also about working to expand public access for Baltimore's residents. It's outlined in my 100-day priorities and was a recommendation from my wonderful transition team. We're going to fill this position within the next month. As you said, it's the first of its kind within the mayor's office. The director is going to be a part of the executive team and report directly to the city administrator. And the position, I think, which is a great thing, will be funded in partnership with the Civic Fund. We know that digital equity here is a problem in Baltimore. We have initiatives and things that we think are possible, but we need someone to coordinate that. And we need someone to coordinate that who understands the landscape that we have and how we can build out to have better access. And this is why we're excited to bring this person on.
I know it is early to ask this, but that's kind of the point. What is the one thing you hope your tenure as mayor is most remembered for?
The one thing that I hope my tenure is remembered for is very simple, Sheila, is that I did what was right for Baltimore, not right for me, and I did it with the utmost integrity. That's the thing that matters to me the most.
Mayor Scott, thank you.
Thank you.
Brandon Scott, 52nd mayor of Baltimore City. Today marks his 80th day in office. We've been talking about what he's been working on and his focus for the coming months. We have links to more information on the topics we covered at the On the Record page, WYPR.org. I'm Sheila Cast. Very glad you're with us on the record. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.